Geoffrey Morgan, TV host and leading Indigenous Australian mentor and motivational speaker. He started his life in Redfern, previously one of the most notorious neighbourhoods in Sydney. Geoffrey started his career as a bank robber and has spent 18 years of his life in prison to finally turning his mindset and life around. He's the creator of the Lifestyle Program, where he helped over 500,000 people and counting to improve their mental and physical health to transform their quality of life. Geoffrey has some very unique insights on success, relationships, men and women. So just for a little bit of context for the audience, the way that we met was on another podcast, maybe a couple of years ago, was during around the time of COVID. And we got along quite well. We went for a few walks. It was when I was just establishing my business and I was really impressed with, you know, what you had created in the corporate world as a mindset coach, as a life coach. But only recently, when we're going to do this podcast, did I realize that you spent 18 years in jail. So I'm just wondering, Geoffrey, how long do you usually lead in with that question or with sharing that with somebody?
I think the biggest thing for me, a lot of people have a perception of that person. So if I share that, their first thought is, oh, I'll run away as far as I can, right? But if I share who I am as an individual, it's a different perception, and then share that story. Who I was then isn't who I am now. And, you know, chapter whatever it was at that point in time of my life isn't the chapter that I'm up to now. And as you said, I've developed into and just won a recent award, prestigious award around Life Coach of the Year 2022. For me, that sort of stuff is important to be remembered for, more so than, you know, who I was back then and the transition in between that. So it was only something I broke out and started to share last year, to be honest. So yeah. I'm thinking when we actually went for that walk, I hadn't shared that with the world.
And it's I forgive you for that one. I forgive you. But to be honest, it's actually very impressive the way that you've transformed everything and the impact that you've had today. Not many people actually get to do that in a lifetime. I think people maybe reincarnate, so they learn their lessons in one life and then, you know, they get to sort of make up for them. But to create so much in one lifetime, and you're still pretty young, is amazing. But just for a little bit of background, what led to those crimes that you committed, you know, to spending 18 years in really high security prison? I know you've had a really difficult background, but maybe you can share a little bit about your upbringing and, you know, what led you to do these things.
Yeah, I think it's probably a whole heap of dysfunction in the background, especially around relationships between my mother and father. And obviously for me, I was the byproduct of the actions that they were having or taking within the background of, or lack of action they were taking around their own relationship.
Yeah.
Which then, yeah.
And what was their relationship like?
Oh, it was just on and off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, there and everywhere, to be honest. I couldn't even describe it. It was just wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's even a term, but it's, yeah, 1 minute they were on, next minute they were off. 1 minute I'm in Walgett, which is 8 hours out of Sydney. Next minute I'm in Sydney, and I'm in Sydney being moved around between locations. And my mother might take me again instead of going to Walgett, be in Dubbo, which is 5 hours out of Sydney. So I don't remember too much. I was young. By the time I was 12, I'd run away from home. But those whole younger years, those formative years, I was bounced between places. And I don't know how much of an education I got in the background. I know I loved it when I did do it.
Yeah.
But it was just all over the place. And, yeah, there was a lot of violence between my father, who was a very violent man towards my mother and towards myself. And that just created a lot of stress in an environment and, you know, hard place for myself to grow up in, let alone their relationship.
You know, because everyone probably experiences some relationship difficulties between their parents. Like I actually had some similarities to you without all the physical abuse and, you know, to that extent of the difficulty. But my parents were also on and off, and it creates a lot of chaos and it creates a lot of volatility and a level of adrenaline, right, that's produced in you, that fight or flight. What would you say is the was the most difficult thing from your childhood? Was it the violence, or was it the, I guess, the unknown, the volatility, where you're going to be, what's going to happen next, what your father's going to do, what your mother's going to do?
Probably the vulnerability around it, because I was left with so many babysitters from both sides. And I think that, you know, I'm lucky being a male. I don't remember anything been done to me sexually, and as a young kid, you know, as you know, it's happened more often than not. And especially for the female side of things, version. I'm not too sure. I know that I remember there was carers that got a little cuddle on with myself, and I think the cuddle was a bit more than a cuddle. That, you know, and I think, yeah, I don't remember it properly, but I do remember that it was more than just laying next to somebody who was looking after myself, right? And I think that, you know, in itself is something that I was exposed to, but I can't remember. But I suppose on a female side, it would be just tragic, and it would be life changing for an individual. To me, as I said, just something that that would have been the hardest thing, the vulnerability of being exposed to people I don't know. And who knows what could have been done or what would have been done. And I probably don't even remember if something had been done. So it's just, yeah, I think that's a sad thing in those types of relationships. And people, you don't have to have the violent background between the two partners. In the end, the relationship of any person in general that causes stress in any environment isn't one that anyone would choose or tick a box in and say, let's go there tomorrow and hang out there. It's one that's obviously devastating towards building any sort of form of stability, structure, security and safety that someone can thrive in. And I think that tears down the walls of that whole, you know, environment to create something of destruction and instability for any human being around that.
Yeah, and I think it's very hard to build up from a place of having a volatile or difficult or traumatic childhood. And for you, it sounds like it was trauma after trauma, and then being in jail for 15 years. Even when somebody mentions the word jail, I can sort of pick up on the energy and the kind of emotions that prevail there. So it's a lot to move through and to overcome. So I'm just wondering, do you feel, I don't know if you've ever reflected, if your father had been different? Because it sounds like a lot of the reason you ran away was because of your father's violence. So if he had been maybe a man who kind of had a shift in his life, maybe he didn't change himself, but he controlled his anger or his emotions. Do you think that would have changed the trajectory of your life? Would you have, you know, not committed armed robbery, or what do you think?
I think it's a huge question. I think that my dad's discipline helped me at one point in time to become who I am today, an absolute beast around getting stuff done and no excuses, do it in real time, make sure it's happening, like be a person of your word. He was always a person of don't be a shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Right.
Don't be a gunner, get out there and get it done. I'm grateful for that forever, because I show up relentlessly for myself and organically that builds trust in an environment.
So he was also about discipline. It wasn't just about releasing his emotions. And, you know, physical discipline was pretty common, you know, a few years ago, especially for boys.
Absolutely. He come from German background, German-Austrian background. So you can imagine coming out of the wars and what was there, and the discipline side of the German people. You just look at the nature, the high standard of Germans and Austrians. It's really, you know, you look at all the brands that are out there, major brands, and people just have this standard and expectation to go out and make sure that you show up every single day at your highest level continuously. You go to the World Cup soccer and Germany, you know, they expect them to make the final every single time, because that's the standard sort of they set. And I think that just rolled off into my father, his father to him, and then obviously him to me. And no doubt, I didn't know much about my, you know, grandfather's background from the German side, but no doubt he was just as physical as my father was, and that was how you delivered the message. And, you know, coming out of the world wars, no doubt it was all about making sure you get everything you need to be done. And that was the mentality: go out and make sure that there's no excuses behind any action, just show me the actions.
But do you think, so without that level of discipline, are you saying maybe you've committed more crimes, or you would have been more wild?
I think so. I'd say I think so, because my mother was lax. She was really laid back.
But the mother, you know, her role is to give love and connection. So it really is the father's role to provide that discipline and attention. So it's a very interesting point that you think without that, maybe someone, you know, with your, you've obviously got an internal determination. There's a natural adrenaline. You know, you're very masculine. So potentially that was the discipline that you required.
I think that add on to my in a building, I suppose, if you want to call it that. That's what helped me become who I became. And the on the flip side of that was my mother's loving, caring, nurturing nature.
And your mother was Aboriginal. She's
Both have passed away from cancer. Unfortunately, when I was younger. So they had a huge impact on me too, because the two people that, I felt they neglected me when I was younger as a kid. And once I ran away, I was like, stuff you and stuff the world, you know. Those that are supposed to have my back the most, my parents aren't there. So I'll dedicate that to myself. And then anyone that showed me that loyalty or care or love of a family, as anyone wants love and care in any relationship, that's where I went down this path of destruction. And, you know, the love and care that you found when you're in survival mode on the streets comes from where? It comes from the streets. So you give back to those people 110%.
And you were on the streets from 12 years old.
Yeah.
So you were sleeping rough, sleeping on the streets.
Yeah, literally, man.
Yeah.
And you got to think, you know, think of anyone listening to this podcast, think about a 12-year-old kid that you know in your network, you know, whether it's your own kids, nieces, nephews, friends, kids, or whatever it may be. And this 12-year-old kid's thinking about how you're going to get the next bit of food. What about your change of clothes? What about your bed at night? I'm walking the domain pathway down to the car park. It's basically a long travelator, and that's just a really warm place. You ever walk down there, if anyone that walks down there, they'd know what I'm talking about. It's just a really warm place, and then just sleeping in that space where there's cameras so that you felt safe. Oh, it's insane thoughts. And then under bridges, on top of roofs, climbing up on a roof so no one else would climb up there, and I'd sleep safe and know that no one's going to do something to me.
So your nervous system was constantly in fight or flight. It's basically geared in fight or flight mode.
And I think over time, even through custody, what ends up happening is it's like anything, even in a destructive mode, we get so adaptive to this destructive habit that we then become a part of that, right? And for me, the only good thing out of that, it was so, as you said, constantly you're under stress, your boat's sinking, you're thinking about how you're going to swim, throw your life jacket on, all of the things that you need to be thinking about. And that's constant. And after a while, what happens is you operate at a level where that becomes, you're the calm amongst that chaos. The ship's going down. And you're saying, just grab a life jacket and we'll head across here. And what we're going to versus
so
the next person.
So your mind became quite calm in the
absolutely,
chaos.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. And is that what you think? So in that world, I think it was, you mentioned in your 20s, that's when, you know, your criminal career really began.
Absolutely.
Right. So obviously there was something about you that made you a little bit better than the rest. And what would you accredit that to? What made you the best of the best in that world for you to do these very high risk things? And also, you know, that takes a lot of skill, right? So if you applied it to another business, which you are now, it makes you a very talented person.
Absolutely.
So what do you think it was? You know, did you have a vision as a child, or?
It was I think it was a combination. I always say this, even with people say, what changed you or what? I think it's the sum of all your efforts. And I think that my father's discipline in the background, the nurturing nature. So even during our last bank robbery, there was a kid that was crying and the mother was out there. We were sledgehammering the safe at the time. And once again, as in amongst the chaos, I said, take the sledgehammer, keep doing what you're doing. I walked outside. Who's got the kid? Lady puts her hand out, said, just leave the bank, and high-five the kid, tell him we're making a movie. So to, you know, that's I think it was that, and that comes from my mother's nurturing side versus my father's discipline side, to make sure that if you did something, do it at its highest level. Don't just do something for the sake of doing something and say you've done it, and then learn from it and grow from every opportunity. And that's how I sort of flipped that script. A lot of people in general will go to a point where they say, hey, I'm going to do this. And they look at something as they've messed up or not got the most out of that situation. And what happens is people then don't want to step back into it, rather than saying, hey, what was the lesson that we learned from this situation to help us grow and prosper in life? And then you turn a pure negative into an absolute positive.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, because even in that scenario where, you know, you had that warmth for the child, so, you know, your mind was connected to your heart, you had that heart connection. What about the guys, you know, who create crimes and do crime? I'm sure you were around a lot of them, and they don't have that heart connection where it's really savage. It's not just, you know, absolutely, to get ahead or to create a better life. What do you think creates that difference? Is it, you know, their upbringing was so bad? Is it evil? What is it?
We're not born. Yeah, some people are obviously genetically different, but in general, we're not born with the capacity to go out and say, I want to commit crime and be violent. But what ends up happening, people of value will teach us lessons within life. And that includes your environment. And when you go into absolute survival mode, what will happen is you'll just do what you need to do. And if you don't have or had people in your life of value that can teach you the nurturing side, mm-hmm. and it's just about you wake up and maybe it's your mother-in-law from your father's side, he's violent. He deals with every single answer with the iron of the fist, I suppose. And, you know, on the streets, everything's around violence. You say something about me, let's step out on the street, let's fight. You go to jail, you got to protect yourself. So the only outcome or thought process, the first thought process to this person is to deal with things in absolute violence. Mm-hmm. And I think that's different. And I notice huge patterns of behavior around those I sat with, obviously a lot of time in jail. You sit with these people and you really see they're human beings. And they're just geared or programmed towards a particular way of reacting to a situation that becomes a part of their software. They operate.
So it's their program, basically. Yeah. Well, it's their programming from childhood. But the thing, what you're talking about also happens, you know, in the corporate world. It happens at a very wealthy level as well. It happens, you know, in the wars that are going on in the world, because this is basically, I guess, I don't want to use the word pure masculine energy, but it's pure force, drive, maybe purpose, but without any heart connection.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I know that you speak to corporates now, you know, you work with CEOs, you still work Huge. In prisons. Do you see any correlation between these Huge. Very different types of people, particularly
Huge.
In men?
Huge. It's all pattern of behavior based around exactly what we've spoken about, the environments that people value within your life and what they teach you and how you need to respond in that situation. And you look at CEOs, people become different people at that point in time because they just have to adapt to the environment to get an outcome. And then they're taught to be more aggressive in this passive-aggressive in this situation to deal with the situation, you know, what's coming up and how we can get an outcome from that. And I think one of the biggest things I try and pass on to all the CEOs I deal with, leaders aren't divisive. Leaders are able to work with the environment they're in, bring everybody into the conversation and create a sound solution. Because I know one thing, once I did what I did in the past, whether it was around relationships, people I hung out with, the crimes that I committed, they were all one-sided. And it was all about Jeff and it was all about my outcomes, and I needed the money, I needed the place to stay, I needed the love, I needed the care. But I found over time, once I understood how that whole conversation could be a two-way conversation, we can find a benefit and value together of an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I've created more relationships on all levels of life, business, friendships, family. And even to myself, because then I started to go, it's not what I want. I don't want this within my life. I don't want toxic people in my life either. And as long as I accept that, then I started to bring those people into my life. And the stress that followed with it, or the heartache or the pain, was of whose nature? My own. So that's mm-hmm. something I just, you know, I know for myself was pointing in regards to how I was able to operate and shift myself by saying, how can I make it a two-way conversation? It's something I'd pass on to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important, because we're often trying to sort things out or fix things out from our own perspective, but we're always working Absolutely. With other people.
True story. And then your perspective is, like I said, if you go back to that violent person, let's fight. And I'm like, we're fighting over X, Y, or Z. Something could be so minor. The amount of things in jail that jumped off over a carton of milk. I'm not joking when I tell you this. And these people are ready to go to the end of their lives over a carton of milk, because I'm going to show you who's boss in this situation. It's insane, right? Versus.
So what shifted in you? Because, the way that you're sitting in front of me now mm. is a very calm, safe person. Absolutely. Even when we caught up, we went for that walk.
Yeah, awesome.
You know, as a woman, like, women feel people's energy, you know, and you're really always seeking safety as a woman.
Absolutely.
And there was a real sense of safety around you. So do you think, you know, that's the way you always were, or did you have to do a lot of work coming out of prison? And you finally came out of prison at 37. That was the last
time. Yeah, I think it was 37.
And you went clean. Yeah.
Went clean. And I think it was my grandmother and mother that, or the elders or Aboriginal women in our community, I was always taught to respect the elders, respect your women. And it was weird because obviously going out doing bank robberies and having that person with their kid in the bank, that female, it's a different conversation to one that my grandmother dished out to me. So you sort of, underlying it's there, but survival's anybody. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and a snake walks past, or maybe it's an animal that you like and you're starving and you got a choice, you're going to take the rabbit down if it's a nice little bunny rabbit, right, because you need to eat. And that's where I think that crosses a line where you just, you know, your thought process goes out the window and it's just a matter of priorities at that point in time.
Survival, the nervous system.
And then it's fight or flight and you're like, I've got to fight, because if I, run now and leave this rabbit and be too kind to it, I'm actually going to damage myself. I might not get through this next 500 Ks. I've got to walk, as an example, in the middle of the desert or forest or something of that nature. So you've got to be very conscious as to what's taking place. And I think that's where I started to cross over. I started to really think about everything I was doing. What emotions do you want in your life? Are they currently there? And they weren't.
But was that sitting in jail? Like, at what point did you, was it a book you read? What actually gave you that shift? Hey, maybe it's something within me. Maybe it's my emotions that's creating this external reality.
Yeah, and it was definitely jail. Plenty of time to sit and think and understand what was going on. But a lot of journaling, a lot of books, different books. One of the best books I read, I think, at that point in time was Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey. And that, for me, just I looked at it and said, I've got all that. Why are you taking these decisions or why are you making these decisions that you're currently making? And are they based around the emotions you want within your life? And
so that's so interesting, because you ticked off everything in that book, but huge. Then you were sitting in jail. So what was it? Was it the emotions that you were feeling? What was different about you sitting in jail to someone who maybe took that book and, you know, they were flying high somewhere?
I think
what do you think was the difference?
I reckon it was more just knowing, like, trying to make use of the time in that space.
Yeah.
I was always somebody that, weirdly enough, sounds crazy. I was about to say valued time, even though I give up 18 years of it, right?
A lot of time it's very there. Contradictive. Most people are busy. They have to, you had time. You could study, read, develop
95%,
yourself.
95% of jail don't use that time to be straight out. It might even be more, a higher percentage. And a lot of us chasing drugs, talking. Yeah. Crap about who's boss and who's done this and did you hear about that, and it just didn't interest me. I was always studying, reading books, trying to journal, training, eating well as well as you could in there, and that created a different beast. I was able to see a lot of patterns of behavior in my journaling. I was like, man, you're insane. And then
and
I read that
book.
Where did
you learn journaling? Because that's one of the biggest tools that I give to men, and a lot of men just find the idea absolutely emasculating at first and ridiculous and silly. Yeah. But after a few times, it is the most profound tool that doesn't cost any money. You can do it anywhere, including jail. What got you into journaling?
I think it was just the time sitting there in space. And you didn't, there was times where I spent in Segro and it's just four walls. There's nothing else, no TV, no nothing, right? What do? They'll give you some books every now and again. But in general, for me, it was more about, look, I think, I had paper and a pen and I just started to write. And I just wrote it. It was almost writing my life story and where it started, how I felt at those times.
Yep, so writing your feelings and
absolutely.
Emotions. Yeah.
And then the emotions attached to it. And then I'd get really emotional.
Yeah.
Because I think I'd stopped and paused for a moment rather than actually go, all right, just keep going and survive.
But that's the adrenaline survival, fight or flight, is you don't stop and you don't pause. And it doesn't just happen to someone who's had a violent upbringing or gone through this. A lot of people are living life this way and they wonder why, there's all these explosions around them, because they're not stopping to pause and just to release these emotions.
As you'd know, I'm too busy. I don't have time.
Yeah.
All of the above, right? And for me, that was huge. I think when the cell locked at 3 o'clock every single day, I was able to have the time I needed and required to go down and calm my nervous system.
Right.
Once the door opened in the morning, man, it was go time. Mate, I was showered ready because literally you could walk, the door could open to your cell, and if you were, your door was opened after somebody that wanted to come and attack you, they'd be standing at your door and the door would open. The officer would walk down a few cells, they'd pull the door shut and lock the door. And now you've got someone in your space going, let's get it on. And at that point in time, you've literally got to get into a space where you and that person are going hammer and tong together in a locked cell. And the only way out is to get past this person. And some of these people, you know, I'm 87 kilos, 127 kilos, fit, strong, can punch on. So you'd get up and you'd be ready and you'd stand at the door so you can get out and hopefully get in a space where, you know, like people just don't want to. Sometimes it just gets full on, in a
We've
sense.
We've got the Frenchie getting excited. Getting excited.
And I just
I think so. Your pet Frenchie, I think she's getting worried about you as you tell this story. Even I'm starting to sense the emotion of the prison. And, you know, animals do feel energy, and we all do. We all feel this energy. Excuse me. So she's getting a little bit worried about you.
Yes.
So there's, you know, we could talk for a week about your life story, probably a few years.
So episode on episode.
Episode on episode. But let's start to parallel into your relationships throughout your 20s and 30s, you know, while you were having this criminal career in and out of jail. What was going on in your relationships? You know, were you interested in women? Did you want to have a wife?
It was like through the younger years getting locked up, you had girlfriends and obviously your emotions are at an all-time high. I found the love of my life. This is going to be forever. As a young kid, you get locked up, they leave you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, stuff these people, and in your head, literally, they're going to cheat on you.
Yeah.
So don't bother with it. And I think I sort of started to realize that by 16, I was very laid back about once I got locked up, that person will leave and I'm cool with that. And I think
so that betrayal sort of created a sense of distance.
Absolutely.
Which I think a lot of men experience, you know, obviously in a more normal situations.
Anyone that's been through that will understand what I'm talking about. They're like, oh, that's it. I'm not trusting anybody ever again.
And I think a lot of men now experience that, where after divorce or just a few heartbreaks, where they just sort of don't want to get close anymore.
And female side too. You've been burnt. Oh, I like you. I'm into you and so forth. And the next minute they've got texting some other person and you find that out. And that happens to you 3, 4, 5 times in a row. And all of a sudden you're like, stuff the world. I'm going to be single and I'll be happy doing what I'm doing. And I think that's where I got to a point where it was more destructive on myself at that point in time as well, because now I've really gone all in one direction, survival. Yeah. And I'm not willing to say, hey, wait a sec, I can commit to someone. And the commitment will actually maybe push me away from this world that I'm currently in. And that's what it did. Eventually, the emotions get the better of you. You find someone that you're really into, and like, this person's working, they had a good family life. I was starting to see values, morals and beliefs I had never seen before in my life because of my family and the lack of time with my family. The streets were my family, and as you can imagine, the values, morals and beliefs weren't even there. You'd do anything and everything, you'd sell yourself literally to, you know, to get to a point. And I think that's where seeing or being around a partner that had these values, I started to pick up on it. And as you spoke about before, those little snippets, it might have been you and I walking a couple of years ago, I'd still learn how people conduct themselves. How that's how, you know, Sash had this beautiful nature about herself. How can I reflect that as a human being? Because I felt safe myself in that environment. Mm-hmm. It was a comfortable, happy one, great conversation. And that means that, all right, great, if I can replicate that, people are going to feel the same thing I felt from yourself when we did walk. And I think that's...
Okay, so your mind was always picking up ways how...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
People so wouldn't realize...
Excellence, different ways
of excellence. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's probably the best term. These excellent pieces of excellence that I could take away. And that's something from the German side.
Yeah.
If you, like, I look at business, all right, let's go and learn from Tony Robbins, Ed Milet, like these people, Kerr and Ray, I love in Sydney, right? Big shout out to you. But these people, and I'd go and do their programs versus a relationship person. What do they do? How do they act? How do they conduct themselves? because as much as I thought I was doing the right thing, I was so inbuilt, especially when I came out of that world. I come home 2010, changed my life, went in this different trajectory, and life was awesome. But what I still had was the money maker mindset of I'm going to get locked up at some time. Mm-hmm. So the relationship you and I have right now, I'm not too fussed by it. So it meant that I was texting other girls. I was doing all
this. So was that in your 20s? Because you did mention, like, you know, at the height of your criminal career, there was a lot of money. Mm. You know, there's a lot of parties. Huge. There was the whole lifestyle that we sort of see in underbelly.
Could be a movie.
So,
easy.
You know, usually when that happens, there are a lot of women around. So massive. Did you notice you were attracting a certain type of woman, or what was that like dating? I don't know if we call it dating at that stage compared to when you went legit. What was that like?
It was a day-by-day thing to be straight out and honest. And even for the female side of things, the perspective of themselves probably in survival mode to find someone who could provide for them, yet you're getting all these blokes that have got money. They just want to, hey Sash, let's go and have a good time together. I'll shout whatever you want, and then move to the next girl, and so on. And then you'll say, "Hey, come over on the Friday night." Lose
very
contact.
Very YOLO
to
sort of lifestyle.
And you're getting locked up
because you don't know what's
going to
happen tomorrow. Yeah,
that's exactly right. So, and that built, that built me the way I was when I came home. I hadn't dealt with that side. I never thought about it really. And I started to do these, have these same behaviors. And what would happen, I'd meet a beautiful girl, set with great values, great family, and I'd smash it.
And you did say that the mother of your children, so you had a family, you had children, and it was quite early in your 20s.
Yeah.
And she had really good values. She went to church.
Huge, beautiful family.
Yeah. So what was it? Was it sort of opposite attract, or and she stayed with you throughout that as well?
Huge. She stayed with the first 5 years.
Yeah.
She visited every weekend.
Yeah.
We just had our son then, who was young, and she came every single weekend. I didn't want her to come every single weekend. And when I got locked up in Melbourne after the 5 years for 7 years, same thing. I said, listen, just move on. I'm not even going to put your name. You have to put their name on the visitors list. I'm not going to put you on the list. I don't want you to come. I want you to live your life. I chose this life. You didn't. Go and enjoy yourself. And whatever happens at the end of that, what will be the outcome of what ends up happening. And to me,
was it a bit of guilt? Like you didn't want to?
Oh, I just did. It was my choice of life, And as much as she knew, did she deserve it? Like, life's so short, go and live it. And I sat there.
And what made her stay with you? I'm curious. Did she feel like you were her soulmate? Was it because you were the father of her children? What was it?
Underlying my mother's nurturing and grandmother's nurturing nature advice, I was a beautiful person too.
Yeah.
You ask
not
anyone.
Not saying you're a terrible person.
Yeah.
But that's,
I mean, as in, but people would see that. But what was happening in the background was inadequacy, was validation, was all these things, right? I was demoralized going into prison, you strip search, society and so forth. So as much as I had this status in the criminal world, as a human being, I felt right down here, Sasha.
Yeah.
So for me, I was constantly trying to, hey, how are you? What's your name? Mm-hmm. Next girl, next person, and so forth. Even whilst I'm in this relationship. And, it's something that...
So there was infidelity. You were going to prison.
Huge.
So what were you doing right in the relationship? What do you think was happening
when I was in a space, I was very present and the awareness to what she wanted in that sense. I constant, and it wasn't about money. She was actually not fussed by the money.
Yeah.
She cared that I was present.
Yeah.
I did things. I went and played bingo during those times.
Yeah.
Like with old grandmothers, like I'm not joking, because she loved that as an example. So,
and that's a huge deal, because presence is the number one thing in relationships.
Huge, right? You and can you watch now.
For all the men listening, it's presence, right?
It's mad. And I look at these things where people are sitting. We're sitting at a restaurant on a date, and I'm on my phone like this, and then I'm like, "Oh, what did you say?" And I literally see that constantly. And I think if you can be how long are you honestly going to sit down? This is for all men and women out there.
Yeah.
How long are you going to sit down together for? An hour at most. If you're deep in conversation, that might go longer, right? But in general, give that hour and time and space the effort it deserves, because that person's giving up some of their life for you,
mm-hmm.
whether it's male
or
female.
Yeah, we're giving up life to
to sit with you, right? But you're sitting there going, hey, yeah, this is how much I value you, Sasha. And what do you say? Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah, I'm into you. I'm into you.
Yeah.
Come on now. The person picks it up. They're not silly, right? And they'll pick that up. And that makes that person feel devalued. And on the other side, and I think that's when I look back at my marriage, something that I was really strong at, I made her feel so valued in the small components of time I was with her.
Yeah.
A lot of the times I was out setting up, getting things ready to go out and, you know, commit illegal acts. And that to me was that was something that I could not separate from what I was trying to do, survival mode. But when I was present, I was very present. And that's something she was more than comfortable with being around more often than not, and hence why she ended up staying.
It's not the amount of time, which for you was the case, it's the quality of the time that women want, right?
Huge, right?
And so we have to wrap up this chat, unfortunately, but I want to ask you three closing questions. And the first one I'm going to preface with something really interesting you told me was that what you learned that women want two things. They want strength and safety. And what I realize is what I train men on, when they want to save their marriage or they want to enter a new relationship, is basically standing in this place where they can provide strength and safety, right? And this is not to be passive, because women want to know that, you know, you're strong, right? They're going to test you, because they don't feel safe with you. But at the same time, they want to feel like, this guy's got me. He might not go to prison.
Absolutely.
So I want to ask you, from your wild experiences, meeting all these different people, the people you meet now in your work, the people you met throughout your life, what have you learned about the nature of men, women, and relationships?
Probably, as you've spoken about, I've identified three things through our program: safety, security, and stability.
Mm-hmm.
And behind that has to be strength, a strong foundation of consistency.
Yeah.
So I was strong, as I said, with my wife for this period of time, to the point where she said, I'll stick by you for 5 years because I love what I see.
Yeah.
And I know if I can get that consistently, I want that forever.
Right.
So that's probably something I'd pass on to everybody. And I learned that from my wife. And she was a beautiful person, and I stuffed that relationship up, period. The end product of that is that if you can identify what those three things are, safety, security, and stability, with your partner, and sit down and even have the conversation, what are they like doing? Give them the consistency behind that. Show up relentlessly for that, and make sure that you don't then also devalue yourself by just, being a people pleaser.
Yes.
You still got to be you. They're still got to be them, but make sure that you're in a space. And when you're in that space, quality of that time, energy, and effort towards any environment is very important. A lot of people won't be able to do that because they do go down a path where their thought process is, I'm spending some time with you.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you complaining about that?
Yes, and but they're not actually there mentally or emotionally.
It's just dead. It's dead time. You want to hang out with me, Sash, and I'll meet you at 3 o'clock and we'll hang out till 4, but then I'm on my phone the whole time. What was the purpose of it? Stay at home. And, I understand that people need breaks to do what you want when you want as well, and maybe you do want to go through social media, watch Netflix or something of that nature, and I want to do business. That's cool. So have your time. But when it's time together, it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it quality time together and make that count.
So strength, safety, and consistency. And consistency is like retraining the nervous system. It's building new neural pathways. So that's a good one.
It's like muscle, right?
Yeah.
Like if I lift more often than not, I become strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? You trust me to have your back the whole time. And I think once you go out and you're in the presence of somebody, you felt that, as you said, with me, and that's just organic. I don't have to pretend.
Yes,
that's
it's
me.
Not tricks and things. It's more of a feeling. And I think it's often actually the hormones we give off.
Huge,
you know, we think
right?
it's something we're gonna say, like, but it's actually the hormones which come from emotions that we're giving off.
A bloke said to me the other day, and anybody tell me this, if anyone's ever said this to you, I'm buying a product. And a bloke goes, can I tell you something? I said, yeah, mate. And he goes, you're so well balanced. And I was like, oh, thanks, mate. And how do people, as you said, the aura, the feel of that situation versus who I used to be?
Yeah.
I was a shell.
Yes.
I was a projection. I was Superman at that point in time. Underneath, I was this little boy crying out for help. So there was a different, I projected out what I wanted people to see from the world. And it wasn't a bad thing in one way when I took that and said, how can I use that and build some qualities around that structure is good, but you weren't showing up for that consistently by getting locked up. So now by taking that away, how can I do that on a regular basis?
Mm.
And it has to be backed by some good values, morals and beliefs. So what's your standards? If someone is toxic in my situation or environment, I'll remove them as even if you've been around me for 20 years, you do you, and I wish you all the very best in your life, but I just don't want that. And that's something I want people to understand. It's a very important conversation.
Yeah, and it's the internal stuff. Like you said, I think a lot of men, they're trying to build these external skills. They're trying to project that image of strength. However, if that little boy isn't healed inside, then he's going to be running the show.
Absolutely.
And that takes me to my next question.
Destructive.
yeah, it's destructive. So, you know, there are a lot of men out there. They're going through difficult times. They might be going through a divorce or just, you know, challenges, depression, anxiety. What advice would you have for them? Because you're someone who has dealt with a huge amount of pain, both in your childhood, family members committing suicide, passing away, and, you know, the horrors of prison and a whole list of things. And you're coming out on top, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're giving off good energy. So if you can do it, I think a lot of people can.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's one habit at a time.
Yeah.
That's what I teach to everybody because that's what I did.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like you got to look at this person, human. I've shared with you already how destructive I was. And destructive, you can put any word you want in the background to that. I was all of that. Womanizing, the whole lot, right? And it, boys will high five you. Yeah. Men will say, mate, you call yourself a man. And that's the difference between both. So I had to then say, what habit could I create? One habit at a time around relationships, around business, around my financials, around my morals. And then I started to implement that into my weekly planner. So I'd add one each and every week. So if my weekly planner had five things in it, next week it had six things. Mm-hmm. And I tried to master this one thing. And it could have been walking around the block and just thinking, calming myself down. Like being locked in the cell back in the day. It could have been going and sitting in a space and journaling down by the ocean, listening to the nature of the ocean and being grateful for life. And then that shifted everything for myself to start to build these habits where I habit stacked everything into. I've got this thing, Power 100 before 9 a.m. So I get up at 5 a.m., sometimes 4 a.m., and I'll do 100 things before 9 a.m. And those things now, so people go, that's insane, but you got to understand it was one habit at a time. I didn't go, let's stack 100 on all of this stress we've already got. I just went, let's do one thing, get good at it. And when I got good at that, it might take a month, week, day, year, then I add a new one. And usually when I say that, around one space. So it might be about my mindset, my mental health, my habits and so forth. And then you become your training, your nutrition, anything that you want to stack yourself with. And that Power 100 for me, that allows me to operate at a really high level as a normal being. And as I said, the chaos, you know, you tell someone do 100 things before 9 a.m. tomorrow, the ship's sinking, jump off, run for your life. And whereas I'm just like, all right, next one, next one. And sometimes four things will stack with one. You could be walking, podcast, watching the sun come up, then sitting down, affirmation, gratitude, stretching, do a half-hour workout and you've covered a whole bunch of things probably in a half-hour period as an example. So that's how I want you to think for those that are watching this, male and female, how can you stack things one habit at a time?
Mm-hmm.
Break it down because we that depth perception of, oh, shit, to create that business, to create that life, to create the being of who you truly want to authentically be, that's so far away from myself, even for me sitting in a jail cell. But if you just break it down, say, what's the first step I can take? And in there, read a book, educate yourself, calm yourself down, effective communication in a stressful environment. And then you start to break down things one habit at a time until you become beast at each of those.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's pretty much just getting control of one aspect at a time. And I think for a lot of guys, it can start with fitness and then it can start with training their minds and then their emotions. So
imagine trying to do your makeup and your hair at the same time. Like,
no, it wouldn't happen.
I've seen females do it. It just wouldn't happen.
Some
are
talented, but
So from a female perspective, you have to do one thing at a time. From a male perspective, trying to lift bench press like this and then do some crunches while you do reverse crunches or something of that. It's just not, it's not a feat. Or doing a chin up and then whilst you're down there, you're trying to do some side crunches while you're doing. You try and basically break it down, as you said, simple steps, make it easy for yourself, let your brain build that neurological pathway, allow that to become a normal behavior for yourself. Your software is repetitive, consistent, strong now, and all of a sudden, let's stack something else on top of that, and then so forth. And that's just an easier way to break down life. Power 100, start with your one today and tag me every single time you go out and do something and say, hey, I'm at 3 of 100. Even if it's 3 months later, it's 3 times better than you were 3 months ago. And that's where people go, oh, I'm not as good as Jeff, or I'm not as good as the next person. You just got to beat yourself consistently. And that's the biggest thing I'd pass on to everybody.
Yeah, awesome. And just to final question to finish up, what are you excited about in your life right now? What are you looking forward to? What's sort of raising your vibration at the moment?
Just to be able to share all the lessons of crime. So yeah. I know it sounds crazy.
I love it.
When I say that, people say, oh, what are you going to teach people how to do crime? Trust me when I tell you this, this is the last thing I ever promote. I've flipped that switch a long time ago. Who I was then isn't who I am now. But we're all humans. You said I've got qualities. What can I teach people to get out of life? And that balanced person that that person seen the other day, the salesperson, people say, hey, Jeff, I've never seen you so peaceful, so happy. Mm-hmm. These different words that are coming out, your vibe, your energy, your aura, we want to share that with the world. Why do I feel like that? Because I'm in touch with myself. I'm aware of what I want out of life. I'm practicing that daily. I'm intentional around every single second of the 86,400 seconds. I'm going to make life count. After 18 years hearing a, it's cell door lock and that key turn clunk and then open in the morning, you become very grateful for that time and you'll make use of it. And now I've been so intentional, it's made me feel this way, the healthiest, happiest, calmest and most successful version of myself, more productive, proactive than ever before, with total inner peace and peace of mind. And if I could teach that to a person, how valuable would that be, right? There's something the other day on socials, if I give you $50 million, would you take it? But you got to die tomorrow. Most people say, hell no. I say, so your life's worth more than $50 million, right? For yourselves, if it's worth more than that, then show me that it's worth more than that. As my dad said, don't be a shoulda, coulda, woulda. I'm gonna do this. I should have done that. I could have played that. Go out and make sure it's happened. And to do that, you need to journal that. You have to write down what you want. No one goes from A to B in any destination without a GPS of life. I'm going from here, we're at, half an hour to Sydney City. I tell you to meet me in the city, you're going to turn the GPS on to get that at location, because that's a smoother transaction for yourself. And that brings in a peace. As soon as you, I say, just find me in the city, you're like, oh, this bloke's so stressful. I hate meeting this bloke. It's always stressful. And you'll step out of that situation. And if that's your life, you're going to go to your grave with a lot of regret and a lot of goals and dreams that could have been action to bring the bliss, the happiness, the aura and all of the above that you could have had within your life. So sit down, take a moment, pause, put it in your weekly planner and start to be intentional, because you're worth it.
Hello. I think somebody wants you back at the moment. Don't worry. Your dad's going to be back soon. No, I think there's so many people that don't realize how precious life is and how little time we have, and it can be taken away at any point. So I think it's such an amazing thing to remind people of that, to share that with them, but then also give them tools and strategies how they can make the most of their life while they're here, right? And it's not just about money. It's not just about getting through things or being in survival mode, right? Life isn't about that. It's about love, connection, joy, and sharing that energy with other people. So thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you so much for what you're doing in the world, and hopefully we'll get to catch up and see what you're doing in the next few years as well.
I look forward to it, and I appreciate it. And just be one last thing I'd leave with everybody is what you touched on. Go out and live your truest, authentic self. People don't realize the depth of this conversation, because we get into the program of go through school, get into workplace, and that is life. You know, travel sometimes, pay your taxes, cook some food. But if I said to you, Sash, I want you to write out your ideal life, and then you look at that ideal life versus your current life and you say there's a whole mismatch, it's like a relationship. Any relationship, you're like, why am I with this person? And that person is yourself. And if you're not showing up for that person daily and doing one thing at a time, power 100 or however you perceive it, your way of life, and heading towards that direction, what are you going to really feel throughout your life? And that's not me telling you, hey, you should be living this particular way. That's you saying, here's what I truly think about. I'd love to travel more, live by the ocean, live in the mountains, live in a tent, whatever it is. But you're living this life. You're not being true to yourself around the life you truly want. So start to be thoughtful, authentic, and show up on a relentless basis around the life you truly want, because you're worth it.